Welcome to the Grace Hour Show, a Christian program that takes a dive into our daily challenges and helps us learn our faith in a practical way. I'm Paul Androlonis, joined in the studio by Philippe Siragi. Mm-hmm. And
Jehu Van
Diver. And Jehu Van Diver, yeah.
Yeah.
He's here. Not on the mic yet, but...
No, we're working on it.
Very soon.
Yeah, that's the song. Soon and very soon. Jehu's gonna be on the mic.
We have big things happening in the United States today, Election Day on this Tuesday. Uh-huh. Philippe has voted.
You're surprised.
Today.
I voted because, wait, can you vote? Yes, I can.
He can. So this week we're talking about team life, talking about the various aspects of that. And mm-hmm. Our episode is going to be talking about leadership as it relates to team life. Mm-hmm. And how we can learn and what we can glean from each other, how we can help different people who are leading teams, whether it's a missionary team, a ministry team, or leading a company, mm-hmm. leading a family, leading a sports team, whatever it is, teams are led by people. And yes. That's something that we're going to be talking about today. And just the overall viewpoint of what it means to be a leader, the things that can get in the way, the things that can prevent us from being a leader, mm-hmm. and all those different things. So you want to start us off with just an introduction, I guess, and we can kind of see where the conversation takes us.
Well, let's see where it takes us indeed. So yeah. Yes, just go back to the theme, and I want to bring up maybe some things that you'll hear this week. So yesterday there was a great episode with Liz and Roger Robbins, Team Life, the Best Kept Secret. So we're not just talking about team life as we may understand it, as we got a clarification from our producer this morning. We're not necessarily speaking only team life as we go in the mission field as a mm-hmm. team, mm-hmm. but we're a team, you know, wherever, you know, so in a church, in a ministry, in Sunday school, whatever, you know, in the family in that way, like we can understand what people say, hey, family, we're a team, you know, and so today we're talking about leading that team, whatever the team is. And then tomorrow there's being a team member. I may not be a leader, but you know, can I be a team member? Can I work with the team? You know, with the famous saying, there's no I in the team, you know, mm-hmm. And then come Thursday, a great, topic on conflict on a team. That's a big one because you don't want to miss this one because I think it's bound to happen in any relationship. Like, unless you live alone on an island, then you're going to understand what conflict is. Mm-hmm. And the last episode on Friday, building a team. So I think it's going to be a great week. So what do we mean? Like, okay, lead a team, what does it mean? It could mean so many things because teams can be can mean so many things. But the principles I think we're going to talk about today are going to apply to most of those things. And mm-hmm. and our goal today, like you and I, we've been discussing earlier, what's our goal today? Well, our goal today is to help each other find out where the spiritual / scriptural principles are. Mm-hmm. Because you don't need to be a Christian to lead a team, but you need to be a spirit-led Christian to be the spiritual team. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. Anybody can lead a team. Can you be a complete idiot, you know, and a narcissistic person and lead a team? Yes, you can. How successful your team will be, it's different. But yeah. Then we don't even talk about this. We're talking about how can we be a leader of a team as a Christian. And I think maybe the good way to start off would be, you know, what defining servant leadership, because that's a big one.
Yeah.
And you want to start off? You want me to start off? Should we both start off at the same time and confuse people? Or what should we do?
Yeah, how about you start off and then I'll piggyback off that, yeah.
All right, so it's funny because like if you study leadership, then you have a trend from the 60s to the 80s where people came up with the concept of servant leadership mm-hmm. as it was not invented before.
Yeah.
And the fundamental idea is Mark 6:16, you know, when Jesus says, I came not to be served, but to serve. That's mm-hmm. the basic of servant leadership. So no, yeah. You didn't come up in the 70s. You didn't come up in the 80s. It was not invented by some great leaders who mm-hmm. thought through the best way to lead teams. Jesus showed us the way. Servant leadership means that, I think that's where we have a difference between the way we understand our role as leaders in the world or in our flesh versus the way Christ understands his role, mm-hmm. you know. And that's a big one because, and it leads us to another point, which is humility, we're going to be talking about. And yeah, these are great stuff in one way. Like servant leadership means that my goal is not to manage you, but my goal is to lead you. Mm. Right. And that's a big difference. Right?
Yeah. I think like that servant leadership mentality of humility being the basis for that is, you know, talking about a team and how to lead a team, how to oversee a team, thinking about the purpose and the goal. There's typically a purpose and a goal when you're part of something, when you're part of a group, when you're a team, whether it's a sports team, the goal is to win the game or to win the championship, or when you're part of a company, you want the company to be successful, or when you're raising a family, you want your family to be healthy, have the relationship and have, you know, each member of that family move forward and progress and grow and learn. And I think that that idea, whatever the purpose and the plan and the means by which that team is moving forward, goes into the servant leadership, goes into how you are going to lead and manage, whether it's in a way where you are humbling yourself or whether it's a way where you are maybe more of a commanding type of mentality as far as we're going to do this as a leader. And I think a servant leadership, Jesus really, as you said, personified that, considering the members of his team, because we all have examples, or we can look to examples of somebody who is telling us what to do, regardless of if I want to do that or not. But then there's also the aspect of considering what the impact my leadership or what I'm telling people to do is going to have on those people that are doing it. And what is the outcome that I'm looking for by the instruction or by the leading that I'm giving? Like Jesus, in serving the disciples, in washing their feet, in demonstrating humility, in understanding that he can humble himself, and he already humbled himself by coming down from heaven and becoming a man. Mm-hmm. And he is showing them the fullness of that by washing their feet in demonstration of his servanthood to them, as a means for them to look back and say, if Jesus can do this as the God who created the heavens and the earth and holds the universe together, how can I not do that? Or he's an example for me to follow. And I think servant leadership is one where we want to recognize the humility and the serving, but also the love that goes behind that. Because there are times when serving somebody is actually, or doing something for somebody is actually not in their best interest as a leader.
Yeah.
Where Christ was the only one who could die and save us. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. But there are other aspects of our life where he has made it possible for us to do things in response to him, where we are listening to what he has said. We are studying his word. We are growing in those different areas of our life. So I think there's that servant leadership can have that connotation where, okay, well, I'm a leader. I'm just supposed to do everything for everybody.
Yeah.
What are they? I'm supposed to be leading them. What are they doing? And I think that's an important distinction to make in these things, that there are some things that the leader does as a servant to those that he leads or she leads, but there's also the relationship that's built in that. And that's the thing that I think is most important in this picture that Jesus is painting, that I am doing these things because I love you.
Yeah.
And it sparks something in that person to also reciprocate that, not because they have to, but because it's just the natural, or it's maybe an unnatural thing that I am being served. And in that, I want to serve as well. And that's leads to more leading, leads people to be leaders of other people. And it starts with that humility and service at the outset.
Yeah, I think when we talk about servant leadership, I think we're talking about attitude, right? Because let's take Acts 6, for example, the famous, you know, establishment of deacons in the church. Mm-hmm. So the apostles are realizing, okay, you can look at Acts chapter 6 the right way, or you can look at Acts chapter 6 the wrong way. The wrong way would be, well, we're too important to be serving stuff at the table. We're kind of a big deal, you know. So I have a mug that says I'm kind of a big deal. So I'm Apostle Paul, not Paul, but Peter or James. And I want to make sure people know that I'm not a lowly. Yeah, I'm not a low life. I'm going to go over there and I'm going to appoint some people who are going to do the stuff. Like you clean tables, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that at all, you know. So because so if you or I or we understand Acts 56 as there's two kinds of leaders, the servant leaders and the big shots, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm one of them because I'm an elder, I'm a preacher, I'm a pastor in the church. Mm-hmm. So don't ask me to bring to serve the potluck at Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. It's going to be other people are going to do it. Or if I think that I'm a leader in the church, like I'm a pastor in the church, and I think I have deacons, and they got to bring me my coffee in the morning when I come up to the office, mm-hmm. then that's not servant leadership. And that's a complete misunderstanding of what happened in Acts chapter 6. Acts chapter 6 is more like, for me, like a job description issue. Hmm. Jesus wants Peter to preach the word. And when they preach the word, it's not like one time on Sunday morning at 9:30 when they meet.
Yeah.
It's like hours every single day. They have to be in scriptures. Mm-hmm. And they realize they are doing both, serving at the table gladly, and they're preaching as well, but they do not have the time mm-hmm. to fill up the job description that we're given by God, which is their calling as preachers and teachers.
Yeah.
So they reorganize, but when Peter is done with preaching and teaching, and can he go and help serve at the table? Because Stephen was sick that day and he couldn't come. Yes, absolutely he can, and absolutely he should. Mm-hmm. So when we say servant leadership, it does not mean that there is a category of people that should be serving and the other one shouldn't. All of us, regardless of our responsibility, are servants mm-hmm. in that way. And we shouldn't use the excuse of Acts chapter 6 to say there's two categories. That's not what it says. Now, the attitude, that's what I mean by that. Like, servant leadership is an attitude mm-hmm. of humility. Mm-hmm. And I'm not doing, like, you know, it's clearly, if you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1, 26 to the end, Paul is making a very clear point to all of us. Like, God is not calling the capables. Mm. So if you're called to be one of those who's going to be in preaching and teaching and prayer and maybe not called mainly at the table, it's not because you're a great guy.
Yeah.
Actually, he's looking for the worst candidate possible. And actually, you know, like in Paris, when I was directing the Bible college there, I was there for 10 years in Paris, France. And we had one of our programs called the Pastoral School. So if you graduate 4 years, you want to be a leader, whether in Greater Grace or any other churches, actually 90% of our students in the Pastoral School were recommended from other churches. And we're discussing that, you know, in one way, like the principle of leadership. Like, if you think that God calls you because you're capable, and then, you know, like I was giving an example. I think, and I truly believe that. So I've been called, you know, in ministry many, many years ago. And I'm mostly administrating or leading or teaching. These are the gifts that God gave me. So I'm doing that. And I tell the students at the pastoral school, do you realize I think God called me to teaching? Because I have zero self-discipline. And I don't know if I would be studying my Bible as much as I should. So God put me in a place where I have to. Otherwise, I won't be doing it. So it's more like God is looking at me and said, this guy's not going to make it. Let's put him in a place where we'll have to. So it's not that God says, wow, I'm so impressed. Let me see the resume. Oh, my God, he did this, and that. Guys, you know, he's meeting with the angels. Guys, I think we found the candidate. This is going to be the guy we need to use. So God is like, he said, where is the bottom of the basket? Over here. What's the name? Philip? They bring it up. Bring it up here. Let me see. Yep, this guy's not going to make it. Yeah. Let's put him in a place where... So it's not like, oh, my God, like... I can adjust my jacket because I'm kind of a big deal. Servant leadership is also recognizing that when we lead, we're not leading because we have the best resume or because we graduate from the best schools or that we are more capable. You know, I heard, and I completely agree with this, God does not call the equipped. He equips the called.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good way of saying this. So that puts us back into servant leadership. Like, yeah, if I understand that, like, I'm not the top of the basket.
Yeah.
I'm not like crème de la crème, as you guys want to borrow the French expression, which does not exist in French, by the way. it's not that at all. You know, it's like, okay, God made me capable because of the Holy Spirit. But in me, there's nothing that is worth a penny in the kingdom of God without the Holy Spirit. So then I can be humble. Then I can have a servant leadership. And then my calling is what it is, you know. So I think that's what we mean by servant leadership, right?
I think that concept is so important for us to think about God not calling the equipped, but equipping the call. But mm-hmm. also, what is my concept of what a leader looks like and what it is?
Absolutely.
You know, in our families, in our jobs that we're in our schools, wherever we are, we have these examples of leaders that we see and kind of they frame, in a sense, our view of what it means to be a leader. Mm-hmm. And does Jesus's representation of that, how does that play into that viewpoint that I have? But mm-hmm. in all of these things, we have this idea of the big shot versus the servant versus, you know, the person who has no idea what they're doing, but it's a people person, the person who really knows what they're doing, but can't really communicate that to the people. All these different examples we have in our lives of leaders, and we bring all those into play to see, like, okay, what kind of leader am I going to be, maybe? And maybe I disqualify myself mm-hmm. even in those situations because I don't meet the criteria for a particular role or what my concept of what a leader is meant to be. And in those concepts that we have, or those ideas that we have of ourselves, we have to think about these things that we're talking about today. Like mm-hmm. maybe a leader can be something different than what I've seen or what mm-hmm. I understand a leader to be. Maybe the leaders that I've had in my life were a particular way, and I'm limiting what's possible or the potential positions or roles or things that God is putting in my path because I don't think that I fit into the mold that I've formed of what's possible or what's capable. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, there's like a job description or a role that exists within a team, and the leader is one of those, but in reality, all of those teammates are working together and are interchangeable and are part of this organism and, uh-huh. and or organization in order to meet a goal. And it's not about the big shot telling everybody else what to do, but about everybody feeling like they're part of this mm-hmm. process, part of this goal, part of yep. this purpose in order to reach whatever it is that it's going towards. And it's not about humiliation where the boss is telling me what to do and I have to listen and obey, but the humility of being able to do those things and being able to put the team above my individual things. Now, it can get to a point where that can get skewed as well, where yeah. I become so worried about the team and so worried about mm-hmm. what's best for them that I can't see the bigger picture and I can't lead in a way also. Yeah. So I think that's another aspect of this of leadership, where I can be very concerned about how the people that I'm leading think about me
yep.
or the perception that they have of me mm-hmm. or how do they feel? What is everything okay within the team dynamic that I miss the actual act of making decisions and actually leading of the team? I think that can be a difficult thing where I'm so worried about is everybody okay? Is everybody okay? And I'm so worried about, okay, what's happening here? Are we putting out fires, doing all the different things that you do mm-hmm. as a leader within the team, that you kind of lose sight of, okay, well, what's the next step? What are we doing? What's mm-hmm. God, what's God put on your heart, or whatever the case is? So I think, yeah, those concepts we have of what a leader is supposed to be and how I do or do not fit mm-hmm. into my own concepts of those, and reconsidering those concepts maybe, or going to God with those things and saying, okay, maybe I'm not a leader like this individual that is a leader that I follow or that is successful. Maybe I don't fit that mold, but does that mean that I am disqualified from leading at all
yeah.
in any capacity?
Yeah.
And they'll talk about being part of a team tomorrow, but how does that transition happen where I am a team member to yeah. being a team leader, and what's the interchangeability of that? How does that happen? How do I see myself as a leader instead of a member? If maybe I'm kind of feel like I'm stuck in this, I can never lead anything. I can never mm-hmm. do anything. I'm not this. I'm not like this person. Mm-hmm. I'm not like that person. And how does somebody get out of that feedback loop of negativity where they don't think they can be a leader?
Yeah, I mean, not everybody is a leader. That's, you yeah. know, I think it's when we have this dream, my successful life will be when I lead. And it doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
And I think in a way, like, I mean, I don't know, my experience. It's not set up as a standard. Mm-hmm. But I've clearly known early in my life as a Christian that I'm not called to be a pastor of the church. Mm-hmm. So in a way, you know, if you would call that number one in some ways, because of course everybody's accountable to a board of elders, et cetera, et cetera. But the point being, And you know it's on your calling, and that's not your calling. So wherever I go, mm-hmm. I have a big accountability and mm-hmm. to other people, because I'm establishing somebody else's vision that's not mine. So I, even though I lead team, I'm a leader in that sense. Like I'm, mm-hmm. In the church here, I have responsibilities, of course, and I'm leading people. But on the other hand, I'm So like I came here years ago to, I was asked by the leadership in the church to become the director of Maryland Bible College and Seminary. So I did that in 2016. And my first understanding of this is, okay, somebody has a vision and they want me to implement the vision. Mm-hmm. So I'm not there. My goal is not to say, well, this Bible college will be not called Philippe Suraji Bible College and Seminary. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to put my, you know, this is my legacy. I'm going to, you know, no, it's like, what are you looking for? I know how to translate a vision. That's mm-hmm. my gift. So tell me what you want. I'll make it happen.
Yeah.
So, but at the end of the day, there's this sense of understanding, and we're not the ultimate leaders anyway. Hmm. So, I think people who are feel stuck in their life, like I want to be a leader, maybe it springs out of insecurity, which is the second biggest issue I find in leadership. Pride is number one, mm-hmm. insecurity is number two. Hmm. That's clearly like if pride is in a way we all. Every one of us has a measure of insecurity. Nobody's super secure. I think if you ask me on a scale of 1 to 10, how secure I feel, I would say 8 or 9 because mm-hmm. that's my personality. Mm-hmm. But that's not a 10 because I do have insecurities. Like, you know, like if some people can trigger insecurity in me because I really, really care about what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. So they could manipulate me in that way. I'm still, you know, we're all open mm-hmm. to that. But I think on the scale of 1 to 10, how proud I am, 11. Hmm. At least, you know, maybe 12. Mm-hmm. It's really bad. You know, our pride is a big issue. You know, I, as a joke, I told the students one day in the classroom, guy, so like if I were to ask you, I'm going to name 5 or 6 sins and tell me if you ever done it, right? You know, like, okay, so mm-hmm. that's, you know, the 25 students maybe in the class, lie, everybody hands gets up, you know, cheat, everybody hands gets up because we all do, and like pride. And then there's 3 hands, you know. And I said, that's the problem. Because we are so proud, we cannot admit we're proud. That's mm-hmm. how proud we are. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, so interesting. So to go back, what we're saying, if I feel stuck in something, who am I talking to? Mm. Am I content with God that has, you know, for me? And we all have to be in some way. And I think that's a big part. I think it's, David Wilkerson, who said, we are not called to success. We're called to obedience. Mm. And that is a huge relief. When it comes down to be a, because whether you're not a leader or you are a leader in the team, that you have to have that as an understanding. Because what are my metrics? Like if you work, you have a professional job, you know, and I do some consulting work on the side, you know, for companies. And what I do is the metrics that we're establishing and discussing with the people that I have discussion with. It's very different than we are meeting with leaders in the church and discussing what metrics we have to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to.
Yeah.
And they're completely different. And many of the metrics you would have in a company would never apply to the church. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But then we measure success. And that's very measuring of success. Whatever the metric is a mistake in the church. Hmm. Is a mistake in the family. It's a mistake in any relationship we have. Because success for us, ultimately, is do you as a team member, like I say, I'm the leader, you're the team member, mm-hmm. do you find Christ in your life? Mm-hmm. That's the only metric that matters in that way, right? So, and then we go back to all these issues that we find in the regular world of business or whatever, where we have some issues with micromanagement. You and I were talking about that earlier. Micromanagement is a problem in a company. Unless your micromanagement achieves your goal and then your supervisor is happy. Mm-hmm. But in the church, micromanagement means that I'm going to let you figure out things on your own. Mm-hmm. That means I'm doing 2 mistakes when I'm leading you in the church this way. Number one is I'm not letting you figuring out without me. So I'm creating a dependency. Mm-hmm. You can only understand things if I tell you. Mm-hmm. And number two, I don't let you find things out before God. So I don't help you develop a relationship with God that allows you to go to him and find solutions on your knees.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what success is in leadership. So all these mistakes we're making in the business world, when we bring them into a spiritual team, then we are not only preventing people to find happiness, if you want to call it this way, but worse than that, we're preventing people from developing a relationship based on their walk with God, which is absolutely essential. In team members in the church. So that thing, that's what we talk about here, right? Leading a team is a lot more meaningful in the Christian world than it would be, you know, in the business.
Yeah, and it's in some cases determining whether you're a successful leader or not is, as you mentioned, is not necessarily a figure that you can point to on a spreadsheet or a pie chart, but it's something that's spiritual, something that's invisible in one sense and a very personal based on the people that are on your team. So like one of the questions that thinking about after, you know, what you're just saying is like, why do I want to be a leader?
Yes.
Is an important question to ask. Do I want the notoriety? Do I want to be up on the platform? Do I want people to look at me? Do you want people to have a respect for me or whatever, because I am a leader, because I am in this role? Or is it something that I feel like God has called me into? Is it something that I want to serve people? Is it related to pride, or is it related to humility, or to the thankfulness and gratefulness that we have because of what God has? And then that question of like, how do I measure success on my team or within the purpose and the goal? I've seen and I've learned in different capacities in my different roles that I've had that you can set out a purpose or a goal and a plan for what you want to do. And you can set up all these different ways of achieving that goal. You know, you can incentivize something. Let's just say you want your employees to meet a certain number of sales. And, oh, I forget what it was. It was, I was reading a book about it, and there was a company, I forget if it was a canning company, a vegetable company, that they canned vegetables, and they had a manufacturing plant, and they were having an issue with insects being found in some of their canned goods. It gets to the customer, they open it up, it has a fly or whatever in it. So as an incentive to, get rid of all the bugs that are being found in the cans that get shipped out, they told the factory workers, well, if you remove a bug from the assembly line, if you see a bug and you remove it, we'll incentivize you with, I forget if it was a dollar amount or some sort of incentive, whether it was a vacation day or a dollar amount that they would get if they removed that bug. Well, the thing that was happening that the employees of the factory were bringing bugs from home into the factory so I could find bugs in the assembly line so that they could get incentives. So the goal was to remove, but it actually created a bigger problem because the leadership had, they incentivized the wrong thing, or their goal was to have the bugs removed. I don't remember like what the solution was. I feel like they removed that incentive and did something else in order to resolve that. But it's just an example of how we as leaders can expect something and we think we know how to solve that thing. And it actually ends up being a worse situation than it was to start because of the incorrect incentive that we're giving to whatever it is, the people that we're leading. Yep. So in all these things, like what is the goal? What is the purpose? Where am I going? And how do I understand the people that are part of that? Not necessarily the means to the end, but the relationship and the development of those people. And I just want to read, we were talking about this earlier about the differences between servant leadership and micromanagement and all those different things. But then the goal of leading a team, the way that a team functions appropriately is that there is unity within the team.
Yes.
And Ephesians chapter 4 talks about this, and it actually relates to the unity that we were talking about. And Ephesians 4 verse 1 says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called. So am I called to be a leader? Am I called to be a team member? What does God call me to do? And in that calling, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body, one Spirit, just as you were called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. So in these teams, we have this unity and this oneness. It talks about one faith, one baptism, one God, one Father. All these things are drawing us closer to one another as opposed to us being divided from one another or being dispersed from one another. So that's the goal of the team, is recognizing what is the thing that is unifying us, what is the thing that is uniting us. And one thing you were saying, and maybe you could talk about it, is the difference between unity and uniformity or unity and conformity.
Yes.
'Cause those are things that maybe we have a trouble like conceptualizing or understanding the differences between unifying people onto a team or in a situation as opposed to conforming or the uniformity that we try to use to create unity.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to say about it. I'm going to try not to preach too long. But I mean, feel free to weigh in, of course. But there's a few things we can say about it. Number one, I think here you have the word, verse 3, endeavoring to keep the unity. He's not saying to manufacture unity. That's a very key, because the unity is a given. Hmm. If you, like, Billy Graham used to say, like, when he was asked about ecumenism, which is, you know, all Christian religions getting to the same place, and maybe we should talk to each other. He says, you know, I'll be at the feet of the cross. If you're at the feet of the cross, he's such and such is at the feet of the cross, then we'll have unity. Hmm. It sounds like, you know, that's not what I mean, but that's what he meant. And I agree with it. So if you and I go to God and hear from him, do you think we'll be united? Absolutely, we will. Not in every single details, but that's going to be the next point. So when we're in the team, we're endeavoring to keep the unity, not to manufacture unity. Oh, we get together because we like the same teams, or we like the same food, or we like the same activities, you know, and that's how I make my friends, or that's how, because it's the same thing in the world, like a team building activity. So when, you know, years ago I was working for the church. I had a team building. I was in France, but we had a team building, an international team building meeting in outside Denver, Colorado, which is Estes Park. You know, it's in the Rocky Mountains, and you know, whatever. I was there for 5-6 days, and I hated most of it because it didn't appeal to me. Like you fall back, and people get you, and that's how you build confidence. Mm-hmm. It's the first time I see those people. I may never see them again because we don't work together. We work for the same organization, but we don't work together. So, anyway, so it's like we're endeavoring to create a manufacturing unit. It's not because I fall. And one exercise, actually, somebody fell down and was scared to put their elbow out and kind of broke somebody's nose. So there you go. So the whole exercise went down the drain. But the point being is that we're not, you know,
trust
not,
fall.
Yeah, trust fall. Bang, you broke nose, and then you know he had a glass. So anyway, the glasses. Anyway, so it was a complete horror. But the point being, the idea was great. You know, you one might say. I'm not saying, you know, I'm going back and say, well, whatever. But it didn't work. It didn't speak to me. It didn't speak to other people. Then we were talking to each other, and it certainly didn't speak to whoever got, you know, his nose broken. So we don't endeavor to manufacture, but to keep unity, that because it's a given. Now, if you look at the verse, you know, there's one body. He uses the same language in 1 Corinthians 12. And I think we need to go there because there's a bunch of things we can say to address what you were saying about the difference between unity and uniformity. There's two errors I think we make on the team when we try to endeavor to keep unity. Besides manufacturing, that's one error. But there's two other errors we're making. Number one is we're trying to create uniformity, or number two, we're trying to create conformity, right? Mm-hmm. So 1 Corinthians 12, and then Romans 12. That's I think the two chapters we could use. So in 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14, you have this trilogy of chapters where Paul is explaining the gifts with a parenthesis of love being the motivation for the use of gifts.
Yeah.
But then he's going to say something in verse 12, you know, about gifts. This is what he's saying, you know. Now, concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I would not have you ignorant. You know that we are Gentiles carried away. So I'm just going to move on because I want to. So now, verse 4, there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. Diversities of administration, but the same Lord. That's the same language I was talking about. One body, one Lord, one God. And there's a difference of administrations, but the same Lord. These three points here, verse 4 and 5, are actually, verse 4, 5, and 6, actually showing what unity is versus uniformity. Uniformity would mean there's no diversity of gifts. There's no diversity of operations. There's no diversity of administrations. Everything is the same. But then you realize when you have the same gift, right? When you have the same administration, means you and I have the same ministry. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're a teacher. Like we're both teaching in the Bible college. Mm-hmm. So you have a gift of teaching. I do. We both teach in the same college. Mm-hmm. But do we do things differently? That's the question he's asking here. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
There's a diversity of operations. Meaning the way you operate in your class is very different than the way I operate in my class. Mm-hmm. If I were to understand unity versus uniformity, I wouldn't understand that. So you know, when I was a director of the college, then you became that's when you came in as a teaching assistant. That's yes. how you build up. Now you're like a full blown teacher in my college, you know, every privilege that goes with it.
So many privileges.
But the point is, you know, so whoever you work with as a teacher who is there to mentor you for 4 years mm-hmm. could have told you then, I'm sorry, Pastor Paul, this is not how we do things. Mm-hmm. So first, you open your Bible with the left hand. That's how we do it. Mm-hmm. And micromanaging, we go back to this. But no, that would be endeavoring to create a manufacturer uniformity, not even unity. Mm-hmm. And that's something we don't want to do. He's making room here. When you do, there's different gifts, but when you do have the same gifts, there's different ministries. Mm-hmm. When you do have the same ministry and the same gift, there's even different of operations. Mm-hmm. And he goes on to say the whole point of chapter 12 is to say, well, the body in itself is a collection of different parts. Mm-hmm. There's ears, there's eyes, there's noses, there's fingers, all kinds of things. Now, how weird would it be if the body was a collection of noses?
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
So we roll around. I'm a collection of noses. I'm running around. All I do is smell. There's nothing else I can do. Now, that would be...
There's just snot everywhere.
Yeah. That would be me and the body trying to create uniformity. Mm-hmm. But he's saying, no, the very concept of mm-hmm. a body is different parts.
Yeah.
There's no body if there is no different parts. So that's for uniformity versus unity. And maybe Romans 12, quickly, because I want you to... comment on that. Mm-hmm. Paul says in verse 12, and you not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove, verse 2, what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So Paul here uses, and when I say Paul, of course, I'm not talking about Paul Androlinus, who didn't write the book of Romans.
Contrary to popular belief, I did not write.
Yes, I just want to make that clear to our viewers and listeners.
Bible college students, I have to make that clear.
Yeah, please.
Listen, I'm not
he did not write
Paul.
Romans. He did not write 1st and 2nd Corinthians. He did not write any of the books.
I haven't been to jail.
Yes.
I haven't been on any shipwrecks.
Yet.
Not yet, yeah, okay.
Good.
Hey.
See, it's possible.
Yep.
You never know.
The Lord wills.
Yes. So he's, you know, Paul is using two different words, conformed and transformed. He could have said something differently. He could mm-hmm. have said, be not be conformed to the world, but be conformed by the renewing of your mind. Mm-hmm. He could have, but he didn't. Because God is not interested in you and I being conformed to an image. Mm-hmm. He wants us to be transformed. And the word transformed is metamorpho, which is used only for the Christian in Romans 12 and for Jesus when he's transfigured in the Bible. Mm-hmm. So, it goes back to what we were saying originally. Team life is what as a leader. It's not you conforming to what I'm telling you to do. It's me helping you or you helping me being transformed by the renewing of the mind.
Yeah.
So the goal is not you shaping people or me shaping people in my team to look like what I want them to look like.
Yeah.
But it's give them room so they would not conform to the world, but they would not conform to my will, but they'd be transformed by the renewing of their mind to the likeness of Jesus Christ. Mm. That's the whole point. If we don't have unity but uniformity, there's no difference of operations. And when we enforce conformity instead of transformation, as a leader, then we also prevent people to grow and find their own relationship with God. And that's also something very important to understand.
Yeah, and we are limiting the potential and possibility of what the team can do to how I think it should be done.
Yes.
And you can see that happening in different areas, in different places where there is, you know, transition happening, generational differences, all these different things where you get stuck in whatever you've done for a long time or mm-hmm. how you've done things a particular way, and then you can't even listen to any type of questioning or have any type of someone come back and try to do something different, mm-hmm. and it makes an impact on the way that you're leading. You're questioning everything about what you're doing, and you're pushing people away, and your mm-hmm. team sees no future, sees no purpose, and you kind of can get caught up in that. But I think, that conformity and uniformity are two things that maybe are our natural way of creating unity within a team or within whatever it is. Well, we got to look like this. So let's have a one-to-one connection between, we need to have a hierarchy. We need to have a CEO. We need to have a pastor. We need to have this. And then we have all these different people that support him, and then trying to manufacture, like you're saying, this organization in order for it to be something that is a team, but it's missing the actual interrelational aspects mm-hmm. of those things mm-hmm. and the creativity that goes along with those things. Because mm-hmm. if I'm being conform to something, then that removes the opportunity for me to think for myself. It removes the opportunity maybe for me to think progressively, trying to improve whatever it is. I'm just going to do whatever I'm going to do. And maybe there is consistency in that in my job. Like, you can get caught in that with you're doing something at a job and there's a foolproof way. This is the way that we do this. We always, you know, make the burgers this way. Mm-hmm. And this is how we've always done it. But then somebody comes along and thinks of a different way to do something. Mm-hmm. And you say, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do it this way. And typically in those environments where there's conformity or uniformity, the person has to go outside of that team in order to try and do that thing differently. And sometimes they succeed and sometimes they don't. But anytime somebody has had those creative type of ideas, I think it's kind of interesting that they can get pigeonholed into a situation and they have to get out of that situation in order to kind of express those ideas, as opposed to a leader of a team in whatever capacity that is looking for those different opportunities for their members of their team to improve or to question, to have creativity, and also not be dependent on the leader to dictate to them what they're supposed to do. That's something that we were talking about with micromanagement and also in this uniformity and conformity thing, is that I am wanting them to be like me or be like whatever picture I want them to be like, not be them.
Yes.
Because we have our individual lives, our individual walks of faith, where God has made us in his image and his likeness and made us to be the person that he's made us to be, not for me to be the person on this team that fits into this job description necessarily that you've given me, but and that causing me to depend on you in order for me to know what I am supposed to do. Because I found myself in some cases finding that situation where, okay, what is this title? What does this mean? What am I supposed to do in this in this title? And it can limit what I think is supposed to, what I'm supposed to do based on whatever that is, based on, like I said, the concepts that we can find ourselves following in our lives. But that personal relationship with God that we want to point people towards is way more important than them being conformed to whatever picture of what I think they're supposed to look like within the team. And maybe that means that they are not meant to be part of my team anymore, but they're meant to actually lead in another capacity in somewhere else. And how difficult that can be for a leader to allow somebody on their team, maybe highly functioning person, someone who's a very important part of the team, to have a role, or to let them go and be a leader in some other capacity. That's, I think, an important part of leading a team also is paying attention to those people on your team who are leaders and giving them opportunities to lead as well. And maybe it, like I said, maybe it means them not being on your team anymore, which can be difficult and would, you know, can give you more work or give you more, can be scary because, well, what am I, how am I going to replace this person, or what am I going to do? But what is best for that person and what is that team member, whoever it is, and then also what is best for the team, because you want them to be growing towards and being brought closer to that one faith, one Lord, one purpose that we've all been brought to. And that's kind of what the leader is meant to do, lifting Christ up so that all people, all can be drawn unto him in whatever capacity that is, in their job, in their role, and whatever it is, so that the team's purpose and goal can be achieved on an individual basis and then in a corporate basis. Because you can have people forsaking their individual success or relationship with God for the sake of the team. And they are, can get disgruntled. They can be discontented. They can be like, well, what am I even doing this for? And then that, and they're forsaking those things in order for the team to succeed. But as a leader, how can I help those people that are on my team be conformed and be brought closer to Christ? And in that process, the team will succeed as well. As you were saying, like, what's my measurement of success? Is my measurement of success the number of people sitting in the chapel on a Sunday morning, or the number of salvations that we have recorded when we went on soul winning, or the number of dollars in my bank account, or whatever the what is my measurement of success, but it's whether I am being conformed to Christ and whether those people that I'm leading are being conformed to Christ and not just my concept of what I think they should look like or even their concept of what they think they should look like, but who Christ has made them to be.
Oh, amen.
Amen.
I think that's it.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today. Listening to us talk about Team Life. Thanks, Philly, for joining me today. It was a great conversation.
Yeah.
Make sure you listen into the rest of the episodes this week as we talk about Team Life and all those. Subscribe to all those different places, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Facebook, everywhere else.